Welcome to the Subway ad for $4.99 footlongs. How would you like it?
I'll take dramatic movie trailer, please.
Here you go.
In a world filled with freshly baked bread, an unsuspecting sandwich lover is about to get a footlong Black Forest ham, cold cut combo, or veggie delight for only $4.99. Subway, make it what you want. Now playing for a limited time only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
Welcome to the Sheridan Report, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. You can go to thegrillytruth.net, click on the banner at the top of the page for MyBookie.ag, and it'll give you up to a $1,000 cash bonus. Put in $2,000, you'll get $1,000 to play with. I am your co-host for the Sheridan Report, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome in Bobby Sheridan. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Mike, I'm doing great. Feeling good, and the NCAA tournament is here. We don't have a lot of depth on the card, but we sure have a couple nice ones, and we already had a winner this morning with Minnesota, so that got us started on the right foot.
All right, let's go ahead and start it off in the NBA.
Well, the NBA tonight's got a couple games that are kind of along the same lines. They are road favorites, which are not my preferred role to be in, but, you know, in terms of backing with money, but they're road favorites, with teams that, you know, they're Jazz and Pistons have to win because they put themselves in positions where in the playoff run here, where they've got to, you know, come through and get themselves, you know, well positioned. And the Jazz in particular have made it up to the five spot. And, you know, you first mentioned this weeks ago on the Grueling Truth when we were doing our show, and you said really 3-12 at that time, or 3-11. It even included the Lakers, Minnesota, and Sacramento at one time. We're all interchangeable by only a few games. So here we're seeing it. Utah's causing itself all the way up to the five spot, and they're only two games behind Portland for the four spot. So that's still doable. And they go tonight, they go on the road, and they go down to Atlanta. They're on this road trip, and they're playing excellent ball. And I've uncovered something with them. When they've had a lot of injuries with their point guards this year, namely Ricky Rubio and then Dante Exum. And there's been games where they've been playing without a point guard, Mike. They've been playing more like with a point forward, Joe Ingles, and then they'll move Mitchell to a point guard, but he's really a two guard. And they'll play a lineup like that, but they have such a good game plan on offense, and they wind up getting a lot of, you know, quality shots. But when they have the point guard, that puts Mitchell back in his preferred role, and it just allows them to not be a guy like Ingles or Mitchell, not have to control the ball so much. And fourth quarter rolls around, they're still fresh. So I looked at some numbers, and when the Jazz have had Ricky Rubio on the lineup, they're winning and covering at a much greater percentage than when they don't have him. And even though he's having a somewhat average year, it's what he does stabilizing that team. And so here we are, they're in the five spot. I've been touting them all year as a team that was very capable and very good on defensive metrics when you look at some of the numbers with Gobert and manning the rim. So I like them tonight. I don't think there's going to be any letdown. And Atlanta's a team, quite like the Suns, who we're going to talk about next. Atlanta's a team that has won a few games as an underdog and has covered more than a few spreads as a dog. But them and the Suns are both throwing in some clunkers now. And so they're really not a good back-to-back. And I think we can beat them tonight with Utah. And by the same token, I think we can beat Phoenix with Detroit. And Detroit's, you know, still attempting to get back to their winning ways like they were doing 7 to 10 days ago. So we like both road teams in the NBA tonight. The Jazz and the Pistons both favored by about 7 points.
All right, what about March Madness?
Well, March Madness, as I talked, I'm really excited about this. Minnesota was – I have two top plays, and Minnesota of the two was my favorite just because this team this year has been really interesting to me, and it's been fun for me to watch them come together as a team. And I thought that game today with Patino going to play in Louisville, there were so many things I liked about that game, and I wish we could have talked about it. I did put on the Twitter that we had a top play in the 9 o'clock hour, and so I did advertise it, and hopefully some people were able to get the report and get that game, but I really liked it. And they went straight up, Mike, and so we got started on the right foot, and we're going to go in game two. We're going to stay in the same conference. You know, Michigan, this is a very interesting game. It's quite like the Arizona State game yesterday in terms of we've got a very unique situation to where Michigan and Montana are playing a rematch. And they met last year in a game which Michigan won by 14 points. And that was the game one of sending Michigan to the finals. And I like Beilein, I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. He's just an outstanding coach. And, you know, last year Montana got off to a 10-0 start. I don't know how many people realize that, but when I went back and remembered and started researching this game, I remember Montana was leading that game 10-0. And it took a little while for Michigan to come around, and eventually they wound up winning by 14 points. I don't think we're going to see that kind of a game today, Mike. I think Michigan's going to probably be up by about 20 at half. And a lot of people doubt their ability to score, but if they can get offense from their defense, then it really doesn't matter, you know, yet. That might be their undoing later, but not today. So I think today we'll get a 20-plus point win. I just hope there's nothing stupid at the end trying to cover that when we've got an 18-point lead or something. I hope it gets to 30, okay? And that's wishful thinking, but it's possibly that kind of game. Montana is 26-8, and they have a good team, and you know they are familiar with Michigan, but that's not going to help them too much in this ball game. So I like Michigan. I think they can cover the spread. 15 is the line right now, and one other thing I want to mention, I thought was really interesting point is, you know, Michigan and Michigan State finished in the Big Ten championship game, and Michigan State had their number this year, as you know, and many folks know. Michigan State defeated them all three times, and you know, Mike, you see this a lot. Both teams got sent to the same location. Now, I don't have it in front of me, but is in Iowa City, Mike? Is that where they both are?
Yeah, I think so.
And yeah, I do too. I think so too, just from my memory. And one team's playing in the morning, and that's Michigan State. And they're going to be having a game coming up here shortly, I believe. And Michigan's got the nightcap at that venue. And I think both teams are probably going to spur each other on. I they're both sent to the same venue. And if you looked at Michigan last week after that game, they were very upset at themselves that they didn't win that Big Ten championship and that they lost the third game to Michigan State. That was a very big – it meant a lot to those kids, I think, to get that. And I'm not saying anything revolutionary, but I like the way Beilein handled that because there's bigger fish to fry. And, you know, Michigan State did win that. They won the 2019 battles against them, but Michigan might win the war. Michigan might find themselves again going to the Final Four, Mike, and Michigan State might be a casualty in this tournament. And that's kind of how I see it. And I think the fact that Michigan State's there in the same venue is going to really motivate Michigan to play a big first round game and not have it be any doubt. So I like Michigan. Let's lay the big points in that game. We've got the Minnesota in the bank. Let's hit those two NBAs. Let's keep the momentum going. And there you have it.
All right. Anything else basketball-wise, or you want to head to the ATP?
Let's go to the ATP a little bit because, you know, the Early Risers program won 6 to 7 days last week. And we finished it off with last weekend winning over 6 units. And I mentioned that. And that was just those 2 days alone, won over 6 units. So a $100 better would win $600 just in those 2 days, just on this program, which you've heard me mention is the ATP and the PGA. And we've gotten off to a good start today. We already have a winner, Thompson at plus $1.40. And then we've already got a matchup winner with Rahm, who's one of the tournament favorites. He shot par, but he beat Day, who shot plus +3. So we've got a couple more still to come, and I'll throw them out there. In fact, there's one more, only one more on the card today, and it's the biggest underdog. It's a 1 o'clock start. It's Herbert plus 205 over Krajinovic. So, but that's, you missed the other game. So, you know, that might not be a good idea just to play the one match. But I do like that. I like Herbert. Double, you maybe put a little bit on that. Not too much, a little bit. And we had a winner already with Seattle. You know, we talked about this. You know, I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, I really liked them to take that series, and splitting it would take it gambling-wise because of the juice. And when I mentioned, I thought we had a shot to win both those games, and we did. We got lucky today. That game got taken into extra innings, and Oakland's got a much better bullpen than Seattle's, but I'll give Seattle's bullpen a lot of credit. They matched Oakland. They matched them 0-for-0. They were the road team, and they squeezed, pinched across a run there in the top of the 12 and held them, and you know, we're 2-0 to start the baseball season. So that, you know, it's a great day so far, Mike, and I hope Michigan and the NBA comes through for the listeners.
All right, Bobby, we're going to have it on this day as always, but that will come after this commercial from mybookie.ag.
Hi, I'm Mike Goodpasser from the Grueling Crew Sports Network, and I'm here with just one simple message. If you're watching the games, it's time to start making money. The Grueling Truth has recently partnered with MyBookie.ag, an industry-leading sportsbook website, who reminds you that where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why The Grueling Truth urges you to check out MyBookie.ag. In addition to the usual thousands of odds, money lines, proposition bets, and futures offered on MyBookie.ag daily, they also have in-game live betting and a mobile site that makes wagering on the go easier than ever. So join now and MyBookie will give you up to a free $1,000 cash bonus on your first deposit. Just enter promo code TGT50, that's TGT50, to take advantage of this offer. You can also go to thegrillingtruth.net, click the banner at the top of the page for MyBookie.ag, and also get the same benefit and the same $1,000 free cash bonus on your first deposit. So visit MyBookie.ag, courtesy of The Grueling Truth, and enjoy winning today. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, guys, we're back on the Sheridan Report with Bobby Sheridan. I'm Mike Goodpasser, and we are to the point where we are doing it on this day. What do you got for us today, Bobby?
You know, Mike, I got a couple, you know, really, I think really good ones. And there's one, the first one's from 1959 on this day. And the 21st NCAA Men's Basketball Championship game was held in California. UC Berkeley beats West Virginia 71-70. And can you elaborate on that game a little bit, Mike?
Well, you know who played for West Virginia in 1959, don't you?
No, I don't.
You don't? Wasn't that Jerry West on that team?
Oh, man. Was Jerry West there?
I'm pretty sure he was.
You know, I didn't know that. I knew he was from West Virginia, and the reason that I was really wanting you to talk about this was just I wanted to hear about Pete Newell, because I knew that he was a mentor of Bobby Knight, and that's why I really liked this on this day, but I did not realize Jerry West may have been on that team.
Yeah, I'm 99% sure he was on that West Virginia team that lost to California in the finals, but yeah,
wow.
Pete Newell was, I guess, I don't know if you'd say Bobby Knight was a disciple of him or not, but I know that he really loved Newell. And I think Newell started as the head coach at, I think it was San Francisco, then he went on to Michigan State, then he finished in California. And really, the last year I think he coached college basketball was 1960. He also, if I remember right, I think he was a baseball coach also. But when you look at him, he won two NCAA regionals, the NCAA tournament in 1959, which you just talked about, of course. He won the NIT in 1949. And if you remember back then, we've had this discussion with Risley. Hey, you go back to the 40s and 50s, the biggest tournament to win was that. And after that, this is something I bet you didn't know about him. He was the GM, and we talked about Jerry West. He was the GM with the Lakers before Jerry West.
Oh, wow. I had no idea about that.
Yeah, because he took, I think he became the AD at Cal for almost a decade after he decided to stop coaching. And then in like 68 or 69, the old San Diego Rockets made him the GM for a few years. And then he went on to be the GM for the Lakers from 72 through 76. So you did have a finals appearance in there and a world championship with Pete Newell as the GM of that team before, you know, Jerry West took that team over. And I think it's safe to say that Jerry West did an all right job there.
Oh, wow. I guess so. And Pete Newell, what a unbelievable icon. I mean, NIT, NCAA, Olympic gold medal. And the only reason I know that is because I know Bobby Knight equaled him when he got his gold medal in 84.
Well, no, I think he outdid him because you also got to remember Bob Knight in 1979 won Pan Am gold.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Remember,
yeah.
The 79 is where after one of the games or after a practice, Knight grabbed one of the reporters in Puerto Rico and stuffed him in a trash can.
Yeah, then they wanted him arrested, huh?
Yeah. And
oh, man,
I believe they attempted to arrest him. I don't know whatever happened at, but the other thing about Pete Newell was he had basketball camps that were huge back in, I think it was the 70s. I'm not really sure, but he had, because I remember Bill Walton always talking about this on the broadcast, and the Pete Newell big man camps. And I think that the big thing of him, especially for big men, was his ability to teach footwork. And, I think that when you look at that, guys like him not being around coaching anymore may have something to do with why you don't have big men any day. Because most of these guys that are coaches weren't big men, like the Bill Waltons and them. They were more of the smaller guys. And we've seen guard play really well. And I think it's kind of the same thing when you look at offensive line play in the NFL and how it's dropped off. And the main reason there, other than just the offenses people run now, is it's a hard position to teach. And I would think basketball, the hardest position to teach is down underneath, teaching guys how to post up, set the screens inside, and get where you need to be, get your body position. And the body position comes from the feet. And guys like Pete Newell was a master at that. And when you look at his career, I mean, I think he only won a couple hundred games. He won like 70% of his games. But he was going places that weren't always real successful in winning. And, I mean, UC Berkeley, San Francisco, Michigan State all got significantly better when he was there. And that 1960 Summer Olympic basketball team, I think that was the team that had Oscar Robertson. Who else was on that team? I can't even remember. But that's back when we actually had amateurs. And that team, I think, beat everybody about like the Dream Team did in 1992.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know much about anything at all about that tournament or that win. And you're right, he got four of them. You know, he outdid him by getting that Pan Am.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's face the only reason he didn't get a Pan Am is because he didn't coach in it. Or he would have, especially back then.
The one thing that I really did like, and I know there's a lot of Bobby Knight fans that listen to The Grilling Truth, and they'll know this, but to maybe a few that don't, I watched the induction speech maybe six or eight times when I get bored and I just want to see a speech or something. And Bobby Knight's Hall of Fame induction is, you know, Pete Newell, it was his sponsor. And so Pete Newell, you know, was up there speaking and actually bringing him up to the podium. And Pete Newell spoke about how Bobby Knight was the most sought after coach to speak at camps across the world. And, so that was one of the things that Newell was talking about, Bobby Knight. He talked about him being a great friend. And you can find it on YouTube, and it's definitely worth listening to. And Pete Newell, what a classy man he is. And so when Bobby Knight comes up to take the microphone, he says, you know, Pete, because you just mentioned Knight around the world was the number one sought-after speaker. He says, if the people in Puerto Rico are looking for a speaker, tell them I'm tied up.
He may have been tied up if he went there. But yeah, the great thing about 60, and the one thing that Newell had that Knight didn't have, was, if you remember, in 1984 with the boycott by the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc nations, or a lot of the Eastern Bloc nations, Knight didn't get a chance to play against the Soviet Union, which I know he always wanted to do because Hank Iba coached that 72 team that got screwed out of the gold medal with the repeated replay of the last 2 seconds until the Russians won. But the U.S. got a chance to play Russia. Actually, the U.S. was first in that. Russia was second. Brazil was third. The U.S. beat Brazil in the gold medal game. And the U.S. hammered the Soviet Union by 30 or 40 points. But when you look at it, you had Jay Arnett, Walt Bellamy, one of the greatest players in Indiana history, Terry Dissinger, who was a great player at Purdue, Jerry Lucas, Adrian Smith, Oscar Robertson, Jerry West. So I think it's safe to say that, I hate to say this, but they probably didn't even need a coach to go win that by 30. But it doesn't hurt when you have a Pete Newell being the guy to guide everything.
Right, right. No doubt.
All right, you said you had two. Well, what's your second?
I got two, Mike, and let's pull up the second one. 1978, and I'm pulling this one up because it's baseball and it's the Padres. If anybody kind of has followed me a little bit, I did sign with the Padres. I was drafted in 87, had a future as possibly a right-handed pitcher, but I largely had no career because I had two Tommy John surgeries back when you didn't come back from Tommy John surgery. So that was my brief cup of coffee, you know, playing in the minor leagues. But it was the Padres, and I didn't know this man. He'd already passed through, I think, and he passed away in 1994. But we're talking about Alvin Dart. And in 1978, on this day, you know, we know it's still spring training. Even though we had two games in Japan, we don't have opening day here in the States until next week. So here we are, March. And in 1978, the Padres fired their manager, Alvin Dart. And it was only the second manager ever fired during spring training. And I know there's a story here, but I don't know what the story is. I haven't looked it up. I've heard of it a few times, but I never really looked it up, never really heard much about it. What happened?
Actually, I think it was like the fourth or fifth that was fired, because you had a guy with the Cubs in the 50s. There was a couple others. I know the Red Sox, from memory, in the early 2000s fired a manager. I don't remember who it was. I think they replaced him with Grady Little, but there was an ownership change. It would have been around 2001 or 2 or 3, and they wanted to go a different direction because they were the new owners. The Alvin Dart things, multiple things. The thing I remembered that I was trying to remember when you brought this up, was he had Ozzie Smith, who had only played 1 year of minor league baseball, and he named him the number one, or he named him the shortstop. And they had drafted with the number one pick, Bill Allman. They moved Allman to second base. They put Smith at shortstop. And they moved outfielder Gene Richards, I think it was, who now would now play first base. And it basically, he moved everything around, and they looked really bad in cactus play, grapefruit league play, whatever you call it, on interior infield. That made people mad. But when you dig on this, you'll find out there was a few things that bothered guys. And one of those things was he was really religious. And he basically made guys have Bible study, even if they didn't believe in God or no matter what they believed. So that got players mad. The other one was you had Gaylord Perry. He could not get along with Gaylord Perry. Now, if you know the history of Gaylord Perry, Gaylord Perry wrote a book. I think it was called Me and the Spitter or something. Do you remember that, Bobby?
Something. I do remember that, yeah. Something
yeah,
like that,
and yeah. I think he clashed with almost every manager he ever had. And
he did. He was a surly guy, and he kind of beat to his own drum.
Yeah, and the thing about this is they fired him because all that just kind of came together. It was a mess. Ray Kroc, who I think, didn't he fail McDonald's? But he got tarted discontent. There was discontent in the 77 season, mainly because of the religious matters, the Gaylord Perry thing, and basically he micromanaged everything, which really irritated the players. So they actually went 48-65 when he was the manager. I think he took over a month into the season in 77. 48-65 is not that bad compared to when, in that division at that point, you had the Reds and Dodgers, two of the great teams that you'll ever see, and you had an Astros team that was just getting close to the point where they would be in the playoffs for a few years after that.
Right.
It was they were a loaded team.
Yeah.
The thing that was interesting, I remember me and the spitter, I think the guy that he didn't get along with the most was Frank Robinson, who just recently passed away. Because I remember reading that he hated Frank Robinson and Frank Robinson hated him. And Roger Craig ended up being named a manager. Now, Roger Craig ended up, I think he goes down as a great manager because this Padres team, and not because of this, you remember what he did with the Giants in the 80s also.
With the Giants, right.
Yeah,
right.
But the 1978 Padres responded great to the getting rid of Alvin Dark and adding in Roger Craig, and they were one of the surprise teams of the season that year. I think they finished like 84-78, which was like third or fourth in that division. And the record for Craig that year is even more impressive when you get the fact that, if I remember right, Oscar Gamble was a huge free agent pickup for them, I think from the Yankees, and he flopped completely. George Hendrick, who was a great power hitter, departed in an early season trade that basically took away most of that team's power. And when you look at that team that went 84-78 in a National League that was absolutely loaded, they were six games over .500 and only had two players, Gene Tennis, who formerly was a star for the A's, especially in the 72 World Series, and Dave Winfield. They were the only two that reached double figures in home runs. And where Roger Craig really made that team great is, you remember Randy Jones? I know you remember Randy Jones.
Oh, yeah.
He was the old lefty. Lefty, threw the ball, didn't throw the ball real hard, but I think Bob Ochenko was there also. And the bullpen, they had Raleigh Fingers. They had John DeAquisto. You remember John DeAquisto?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they had a couple other guys. He used to play for the Reds. Bob Shirley, I think, was a long reliever. But the thing about that team was, when you look at that, I mean, the pitching staff is what made that team 84-78. And Gaylord Perry had one of his best seasons ever. I think his ERA was under 3, and he won like 21 or 22 games. He had Jones, Ochenko, and then, of course, you had Raleigh Fingers. And Roger Craig was one of the great pitching coaches in baseball history, I think. And his influence on that team and what he did with them, and then eventually what he did with the San Francisco Giants of the 80s, I think he's got to be one of the smartest baseball men that ever lived.
Yes, I agree.
And Alvin Dark was one of the biggest micromanagers that ever lived.
So there you go.
And that you might even get to the point where you break it down. Alvin Dark may have even known more baseball than Roger Craig, but I think Roger Craig was really good at dealing with players, finding their weakness, helping them, and they believed in Roger Craig, where Alvin Dark was so overbearing that I think he lost his players that way.
Right. Hey, well, I'm really glad to hear that stuff. And I had never really known what the deal was that was there. And I would say the Padres did a good job with that move because.
Yeah, but I'll give Alvin Dark this. He was a genius when he got mocked for putting Ozzie Smith at third base and leaving him there.
You mean shortstop?
Yeah, that's what I meant. Shortstop.
Yeah, shortstop. Well, yeah, Ozzie Smith was, as we know, a wizard, and he's one of the greatest shortstops of all time.
And didn't they trade him straight up for Gary Templeton?
They did, and at the time, the thought process was that Ozzie Smith was a Gold Glove fielder, but he couldn't hit, and Gary Templeton was as talented a player as really there was in the league, but I just got through tweeting this. I got into a little bit of a commentary with a guy named Bob Kravitz, who I think he works with Indianapolis Star, maybe. And it was all very good tweeting. It wasn't any bad stuff, but he put a picture up of of Gary Templeton, but he was speaking about Tony Gwynn. And I said, well, excuse me, but that's Gary Templeton, you know? And he said, no, it's not. I said, well, yeah, it is. I mean, I know that's Gary Templeton. And so then he went back and researched, and he admitted that, oh, yeah, you know, I put the wrong picture up. And
and or I thought it was Gary Temple, Tony Gwynn, and it wasn't, because he covered the Padres in 84. He went on to explain to me. But what reason I'm bringing this up was because Gary Templeton was a first-round draft pick, you know, 13th player picked overall, and Tony Gwynn was a third rounder. He was a two-sport star, as you remember, you know, basketball and baseball. And Gary Templeton was a five-tool player and outstanding hitter. And
yeah, and that was a time where the best shortstops were your Ozzie Smiths, your Dave Concepcion, and your Larry Boas, who were basically there because of their gloves.
Right, and Templeton, you know, was an offensive threat, you know, not just a fair hitter. He was a great hitter, and that would have been a great trade, turned out-wise, had Templeton kept it going. But, see, his undoing was off the field. He got into drugs off the field and had some problems off the field.
Well, the other thing I remember from him was the Cardinal fans started to hate him, and they booed him a lot. And in 1981, the strike season, I remember that I believe he made an obscene gesture like a couple times towards some fans who were heckling him. And then Whitey Herzog physically pulled Templeton off the field, because I remember watching this on This Week in Baseball, which is a song that opens our show. And at the end of the season, they traded him to the Padres for Ozzie Smith. And it worked out great for the Cardinals, because in 1982 they go on to sweep the Braves in the playoffs, and then in seven games, of course, they beat the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, and they had a lot more success even after that. And then he wound up being a good hitter. I mean, he was actually a pretty good hitter.
He was kind of like Concepcion, where he wasn't a great hitter, but there was like a 4 or 5 year period where he was batting around 300, which was kind of like Concepcion, because you look at him. Once you get to 76 and on, Dave Concepcion was batting 280, 290, even 300 in 76 season. And these were guys that obviously worked at their craft and got better at hitting.
Exactly. And you know, they say it takes a lifetime to learn how to hit. You know, that's like some of the things I've heard. And, you know, to be a young guy and be able to hit is just a special thing. And when you see those kind of guys, it's just – doesn't come around all the time.
Well, and this is the thing that's interesting about Templeton, because I think his lifetime average ended up like 270, 275, right around there. And I know that he led the Cardinals 77 through like 80 or something, I think the most hits. He was the best hitter on the team at the time. But when you look at him when he went to the Padres, he still had a good career. But, you know, his batting average career-wise with the Padres was like in the 250s. So that'll tell you that his lifetime batting average with the Cardinals was probably up around 300. So he was the opposite. Yeah. You talked about the drug problems he had and everything. Yeah. And I think you had guys like Smith and Concepcion that worked their asses off to become better hitters. Templeton just kind of flatlined and dropped off because he was not a hard worker and other things were more important to him. But he did play a big part in 1984 of getting that Padres team to the World Series. You remember the great, I still think game four of that series where Garvey hits the walk-off home run was one of the greatest baseball games I ever saw.
The Cubs, right.
Yeah.
And
if you remember games one and two at Wrigley Field, they got destroyed. I think they came back at game three and won like 7-1. And then you had the great game in game four where Garvey hits the home run. And in game five where Lee Smith, who never blows a save, blew a save.
And if you remember who the second baseman was, there were two second basemen on that team. And one of them I talked to every once in a while on Twitter, that was Tim Flannery. He was a backup second baseman. Great guy. He's a singer now. And he was Bochy's coach for three of the world champions.
We need to get him on the show, man.
We have to. We will, and he'll do it. He'll do it, Mike.
I'd love to do a legend show with him. You can do it with me if you want.
Oh, that'd be. I would love that. That'd be great. But the guy who started over Flannery at second base on that team was Alan Wiggins, and Alan Wiggins
another drug problem.
Of bases. There you go. See that.
Actually, almost that entire team had drug issues, from what I remember.
Yes, they did. They did. And, you know, it was just sad. And, you know, then I came around, not the major league level, I came into the system in 87.
And that farm system was loaded at the time, and you know, they had both Alomars and Carlos Baerga was a young guy, you know, at that time. They had Benito Santiago, who was just named the Rookie of the Year, and you know, they still had, I mean, they had Tony Gwynn, who was the man. And I'll tell you why Bob Kravitz got fooled, was because a guy tweeted that he knew, and he had a check mark next to his name, so he must be somebody. He's not a sports guy, but maybe a reporter or something. And the guy put Templeton's picture, but he put, the caption was "the man," and it was a Padre helmet. And so yeah. Bob Kravitz was fooled by that. And to Kravitz's defense, there's only one "the man" in San Diego, and that's Tony Gwynn. Nobody else can be the man. And I think that's what fooled Kravitz. And anyhow, when the guy came back on and was said, well, why did, you know, he said, well, he was.
What about Kurt Bevacqua? Why isn't Kurt Bevacqua the man? Because I remember that he could blow the biggest bubble that I've ever seen.
Well, have you ever heard this? Your fans should do this. This is great. You bring up Kurt Bevacqua. Tommy Lasorda has a rant. Have you heard it? Tommy Lasorda F bombs the hell out of Kurt Bevacqua.
Oh, didn't Bevacqua play a trick on him or something?
No, Bevacqua, something happened where, I'm not remembering the story well now, but he says, and that effing Kurt Bevacqua, he couldn't hit water if he fell out of a boat, and because Bevacqua was popping off about something, and I don't remember, but if you go on YouTube and you Google it, Tommy Lasorda Bevacqua, something like that, you'll hear the rant. Somebody captured that, and Tommy Lasorda had a couple good rants in his day, and I remember Kurt Bevacqua was one of them. That's great, Mike, that you bring that name up.
All right. Well, I just remembered a bubblegum card because it was like the Oscar Gamble card when he was traded or something with the Yankees, and he had the hair and used to get one in every pack. You get the same thing with the Kurt Bevacqua bubblegum one. All right, guys, we're going to wrap it up. I want to remind you to go to thesheridanreport.com or go to Twitter at @SheridanReport. You can buy Bobby's take, $10 a day or $50 for the month. You can get the Sheridan Report. Well worth the money once you get the Sheridan Report, or even if you don't. But we'd rather you did, so you'd have a better chance to win. You go to mybookie.ag, put in promo code TGT50, or to make it even easier, go to thegruelingtruth.net, click on the mybookie.ag banner towards the top of the page. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I want to remind you guys, survive in advance. We'll be back tonight after the final NCAA tournament game to talk about the games that happened today and the preview to games tomorrow. And who knows, maybe Bobby will be on to give you some picks on the early games so you could use it with mybookie.ag and make a little bit of money. Remember, you can hear all of our shows on iHeartRadio, Spotify, iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, YouTube, wherever you find sports podcasts, you'll find The Grueling Truth. So for Bobby Sheridan, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Welcome to the Subway ad for $4.99 footlongs. How would you like it?
I'll take dramatic movie trailer, please.
Here you go.
In a world filled with freshly baked bread, an unsuspecting sandwich lover is about to get a foot-long Black Forest ham, cold cut combo, or veggie delight for only $4.99. Subway, make it what you want. Now playing for a limited time only at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
The iPhone XR is here at T-Mobile, and there's a whole lot to love. Like taking those perfect new year, new you portrait mode selfies you're going to share.
Nice.
It's the best way to stay connected to everyone you'll heart most in 2019. So get ready to fall in love with iPhone XR on T-Mobile, the most loved in wireless. Call 1-800-T-MOBILE to learn more or visit a store today.